Say the word lead, and it's likely the first thing you might think of is the contaminated drinking water crisis in Flint, Michigan. Aging public infrastructure, including Milwaukee's own, may also come to mind, but lead contamination is not restricted to old pipes. An estimated 10% of kids under 6 in Milwaukee have unhealthy levels of lead in the blood, and the culprit is lead-based paint.
Lead-based paint was outlawed in this country in 1978, but our older housing stock means there are layers upon layers of old dangerous paint in and on houses. And when that paint chips off, it can make its way into the soil and then into people, plants, and animals.
Today on Morning Edition, environmental reporter Susan Bentz shared the story of a collaborative project in Milwaukee that targets the issue called Growing Healthy Soil for Healthy Communities. It's a broad partnership that includes the Medical College of Wisconsin, 16th Street Community Health Centers, and Walnut Way, among others. The program educates home gardeners about lead danger, tests their soil, and works to reduce or eliminate any contamination.
Thus far, 33 family gardens have been remediated. Ben spoke with several of the people helping to shape the program, including Sherry Johnson of the Medical College's Center for the Advancement of Underserved Children.
We all started to think about the way that we could partner across two parts of the city and two neighborhoods and several cultures to do research in a way that engaged residents from the neighborhoods around issues that mattered to them and that included their voice and that would have impact on the health of the people in the community.
So lead stood out from the beginning as the number one contaminant that you could attack?
Jeff Siemering, UW Soil Science Department, UW Extension.
Yeah, lead is, in urban environments, that's the number one priority pollutant, especially when you're looking at residential housing. Outside of industrial, commercial activities, it's really lead, mostly from lead-based paint, and then also from the lead additives that was in leaded gas from the 20s through, was it 1978 or... 85, that's right, 78 yep. Was lead paint, was when that was banned. So it's really lead.
So once it's there, it's there?
It's there, and it doesn't really move. It doesn't leach quickly through the soil. Once it gets in the soil, it stays. It likes to likes to hang out. It doesn't go away. And plants don't like to take it up either. So, you know, there's the idea that people can plant sunflowers, and it sucks the lead up. It doesn't. It stays there.
So the key concern is that when kids get involved in gardening and what can happen there?
People eat a lot more soil than they think they do. So when you're involved anywhere where there's bare ground, bare soil, gardening, playgrounds without grass growing on them, you can be exposed that way. And you know, kids more so than adults. Lead impacts their systems more readily than it does adults, and they put their fingers in the mouth a lot more, so they eat even more soil than the rest of us. So yeah, urban agriculture is great. We want people to have access to fresh fruits and vegetables, get people outside, reconnect, you know, with their community, but you need to understand where there might be hazards.
Sherry Johnson, neighbors were very clear with us that they weren't interested in science that just documented a problem, that they were interested in science that actually helped address a problem, at least could test some possible solutions.
Ben Gramling from the 16th Street Community Health Centers. The early stages of our research project, as Sherry described, we're looking at a broader range of issues. So we were looking at produce grown in backyard gardens and how much, if any, lead was being taken up by those plants, and comparing it to produce that could be bought off the shelf in the neighborhoods where we were really targeting our activities. So it was a different set of issues, including access to retail produce and retail soil and garden centers. It was a really informative process for us that really helped lead to the study that we're engaged in right now and really helped us target our efforts towards the direct soil risk that Jeff described earlier.
And also looking at if you're going to put in a raised bed or you're going to add soil to your garden, you know, where should it come from? I know we looked at, you know, where you can buy it at Menards or Home Depot, or, you know, because you need to know where you're getting the topsoil from, because you may not know and you may be putting contaminated soil in your garden if you don't know where it's from.
So is one of the challenges the testing of the soil?
It is. A couple of issues. One is there's certain forms of lead once it gets into the soil that are not as bioavailable or readily impact a human body. That's really hard to figure out. CDC is heading that direction because they know there's enough lead out there. There should be a lot more problems than what we're seeing. But regulations are all based on total lead. And Sanjeev, we can do that. We've got actually another study trying to figure out using simple soil tests to determine what's bioavailable. So there are the technical issues of that. And the other is accessibility. There are really two labs now in Wisconsin that are readily available to the public. One is the UW lab, and that's now consolidated in Marshfield. And then we've brought in the health department here in Milwaukee to help do that, just to have some local capacity as well.
Right. So, Sanjeev, yes, we do get involved, health department do get involved once in a while, look into the total lead in soil. But what Jeff just explained, there are bioavailable component of the lead, like when your plants are sucking those. If you try to mimic that, like your physiology of your body, I mean, what part of that lead, how much was being sucked into your vegetables and grains? So that's where we kind of got involved in the second phase of the study with Jeff, and Doug was very helpful, bringing in all the latest and current method. But then we found it to be an opportunity for us not only to support this grant, but also for future offering to the jurisdiction and beyond.
Jeff, and it's not to say that there aren't commercial labs, but they're really set up to handle commercial accounts, to get a sample from a garden. That's just not their niche, and it's really public health labs or the UW Extension labs that are set up to work with those individuals.
So this is Anna. I don't know if I can speak to the evolution of the overtime piece. I'm one of the more recent comers also, having joined in April of 15. The reason that I was drawn to this project, I joined the Center for Advancement of Underserved Children at MCW, like Sherry mentioned, was seeing how public health could used in community-based participatory research, which is sort of a facet that not a lot of people have the honor to participate in a partnership as strong as this, to not only gather the data, but then we also hope to have policy impacts and be able to affect changes or make recommendations to other communities that might be interested in knowing about some of these same issues or can kind of confront them. I know we had staff that attended, for example, a meeting last year in Minneapolis that covered some of these issues. So we really want to be able to, in studying it locally with the public health lens, we hope to have broader applications. But, for Milwaukee, we all kind of want to make sure that we're able to kind of move the bar knowledge-wise and or for the health of the soil for the people who do enroll, so we can sort of have those sorts of impacts.
So what's the kind of policy that this could foster?
I work really on the program side right now, so helping with gathering the data and maintaining the integrity of the study and the protocol and those sorts of things. But I think as we get more data, as we go in those directions, we are being able to pivot a lot more of our energy towards our potential avenues to look at policy. I know that the spills law is one thing that perennially comes up in these conversations about the way in which it was designed isn't necessarily meant for homeowners. There's no differentiator for those sorts of people versus large industry and things. So I want to hand that off to the people who have spent their careers discussing it. But those are the sorts of things that, get me excited about policy in this level and make me want to stay engaged in the project. But that, certainly that's why we have the partners who have put their blood, sweat, and tears in this for many years.
So this is Jeff. Currently under Wisconsin law, if you have over 53 parts per million lead and you test and you find in excess of that, you're supposed to notify DNR that a spill has occurred. Where homeowners run into problems is that whether you're GE dumping PCBs in the Fox River or you own a home in Milwaukee, it's the same. Now this law, it's a powerful law to improve public health. It really allows DNR to get stuff cleaned up. It's just it sometimes works at cross purposes with what the aims of this project are. DNR has been open to dialogue. It's just trying to figure out how we might be able to do this and what are some options. And there are places where they have discretion. They're not just setting up a wall of no. There's good dialogue. But it's just trying to figure out how to work through that and work within the system to improve conditions so that people can make knowledge-based decisions.
And of course, what you're looking at here is helping to foster healthy neighborhoods where people are at home where they live and they're as healthy as they could possibly can be.
Right. And so in the past, when a contaminant rises to great enough interest in public health, then funds are diverted to, cause that, to clean up that contaminant. You're looking at Flint, where they've got lead pipes. Madison is always held up now as an example that 20 years ago they decided to get rid of all the lead pipes. So those are the kind of the polar opposites. Lead-based paint on homes is another. It's out there, and so that may be at some point where funds need to be committed to take care of that.
Kevin Engstrom, 16th Street Community Health Centers. I'm a former educator, so I think about this stuff all the time. A lot of the work that we do, there is a public education component to it, which is probably pretty obvious, but it's beyond just public education, it's public science education. And a lot of these issues are really hard to understand if you don't have a basic working of chemistry or biology or some of these kind of basic core scientific concepts. What I would like to see would be, in addition to some of the public education, of potentially creating something that could be part of a high school science curriculum to take some of the core ideas that kids need to learn as part of a chemistry curriculum and have some of these more public health concepts and ideas integrated in, so kids could see how some of the science ideas are engaged with in everyday life.
At this point, you already have families who are participating and who have learned and modified their gardening practices. So what kind of things are going on?
My name is Alejandra. Going around the South Side, I'm able to visit some of the properties where interventions have already happened. And it's wonderful to be able to see a raised bed, which is just like before when it was installed, it was just completely new soil. And now I see the greens of cilantro, and some of them have started learning about how to grow kale, which is something we saw more in the North Side and not the South Side. So that's something they learn at the workshops, which they can take back and implement. And just being able to have conversations with neighbors and go over the knowledge that they've learned and be able to have that conversation about, oh yeah, I told my neighbor that she should be part of this program because of the lead-based paint that's falling off her garage. And being able to recommend her to be part of the program has been really nice to hear about that.
I think a big benefit that I like is that I get phone calls from participants or emails asking about some of the things, but maybe expanded things from the workshops. So they're constantly, kind of back to what Kevin's saying, thinking more scientifically from what they've learned from this project. Of course, they have the concern about the contaminants, but growing and different things in there, like Alex is saying, spreading the word to different people within the neighborhood. So that's been a great thing. I get emails from the South Side. I get emails, I get phone calls from people saying, asking me just general questions about gardening. In Walnut Waste capacity, we've grown in that to be able to share that information at a more, I guess, more readily, accessible kind of thing. So
the Milwaukee County Extension is a partner and isn't here today with us, but they are sharing with us the resource of what they call master gardeners, who are people from around the county who are trained in how to be great gardeners, and they come to our workshops as an additional resource for neighbors, and they can answer questions about pests and bugs and how to make your tomatoes really tasty. I mean, the range of stuff, and it really adds additional capacity for neighbors to learn how to garden and make it the best they can make it.
Dovetails well, this is Jeff. Dovetails well, some of the last meetings that they've been at, they've been asking more of the questions about lead, because lead soil contamination is not part of master gardener training. For the state. And this is an issue anywhere you have housing that's built before 1978. Rural and urban blood lead levels in kids are equally high, and some early studies have shown that sometimes in rural areas it's higher. So this isn't just an inner city Milwaukee problem, it's a statewide issue.
The Growing Healthy Soil for Healthy Communities project continues in Milwaukee, North and South Side neighborhoods. Environmental reporter Susan Bentz brought us the voices you just heard, and you can hear more about the project later this week during WUWM's Morning Edition.